Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, Don Backus is with us. You know Don Backus. You've seen him at all the trade shows. Don has great information for us about the advantages of liquid cooling and FM transmitter and how that's really the cool thing now. The cool thing now. Don Backus and Chris Tobin are with us here on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, saving, and support, online at bgs.cc. By the new Ruby console from Lavo. See Lavo in your future at lavo.com/twrt. And by the Telos Alliance, shaping the future of audio, inspiring you to create the most exciting and engaging audio experiences imaginable. Visit telosalliance.com/opt-in.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. It's our weekly exploration of the world of radio technology, from the microphone like this to the light bulb at the top of the tower and everything in between. And this time, today, we're going to be talking about something that's much closer to the light bulb at the top of the tower. You know what? We used to do a show on tower lighting. We have, haven't we? I think we did, yeah. With Richard Humphreys, yeah. I think we did one with tower lighting, yeah. But anyway, we're talking about transmitters and some of the incredible tech that's in a transmitter that, frankly, I have never used before. And so I'm really excited to talk about it. Can't even pronounce it, but our guest will in just a minute. I'm Kirk Harnack, the host of the show. I work for the folks of the Telos Alliance, and I occasionally do some drone flying, love to fly around towers. And we do this podcast right here every week, This Week in Radio Tech. So that's me. I'm here in my Nashville studio. And let's throw it over to Chris Tobin, who's with us. Chris, welcome in. You are in your studio in probably Newark, right?
Yes, in Newark, a nice, wonderful day. And I'm in my very Spartan voice booth. I keep meaning to get a couple of posters, put them on the wall.
Get one of those, you know those posters that show the entire spectrum from DC to daylight and all the allocations and stuff?
Oh, what fun is that?
Oh, what? Okay.
Here we go.
You got something much funner. Oh, celebrate Brooklyn.
All right.
There you go.
Awesome. You know, I always wonder how topical we should be. If we were really on top of it, we'd have a beautiful poster of Aretha Franklin on the wall, you know, and, you know, mourning her loss. That's been all over Facebook today.
Queen yes, Soul. I've been very busy today.
Yeah, yeah. I think she was born in Memphis, Tennessee, and I lived in Memphis for 10 years. So that is definitely the place for her. Yeah, we could have been, actually, close by. That's true. I lived in a soulful neighborhood when I lived in Memphis. All right. So Chris is here. Glad you're here, buddy. One of the things we're talking about on today's show is some interesting transmitter installations at One World Trade Center. And Chris, I know you've been there. Our guest is going there. There's going to be some meetings there, and there's some amazing tech there that we've touched on before. We're going to try to talk about it more today. And actually, we're going to talk about how you can have the same tech in your transmitter plant that they have at One World Trade Center. So that might be worth listening to. So let's bring our guest in right now. I've been hemming and hawing around it. From Michigan, I think it's Lansing, it's our friend Don Backus. Yep. Hello, Don. Welcome in.
Hi, Kirk. How are you? It's Grand Rapids.
Oh, Grand Rapids. Yeah. Well, you're just down the road from Lansing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, Lansing's about halfway between here and Detroit, the home of Aretha Franklin these days. So.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, yeah. Detroit was made all kinds of sense for R&B and soul musicians to call home, didn't it, over the decades?
Indeed. Yeah. Yeah. So that was awfully sad news.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to start the show that way, but we were talking about what to put on the wall and whether or not to make it topical. Yeah. So, well, we're going to talk about some technology that I'm sure Aretha's voice has been through. And Don, let's tease our audience a bit, because in all my years of playing with transmitters, AM and FM, I never got to use one that was liquid cooled. And apparently that has become a pretty big thing nowadays because, a couple of companies, at least maybe one, has this technology down really, really well. You want to tease us a little bit on what we're going to hear in the next hour?
Sure. Rohde & Schwarz, one of the ways of pronouncing it, a rather large technology company, has developed a series of liquid-cooled television transmitters, but also radio transmitters. So we have FM transmitters that are spectacularly reliable, very energy efficient, and you can have one in your own transmitter building, or two, or three. We're cool.
I'm really curious as to the implementation of this liquid cooling technology, and it's the whole idea of liquids around high voltage or even low voltage, but lots of power scares me a bit. So you're going to set me at ease on that. And we're going to talk about a bit of the history of liquid cooling, open systems where we even had fountains in front of the transmitter sites. I don't think that Rode and Schwartz transmitters come with a fountain. That may be optional.
No, sorry. No. It's not even optional, sadly.
If there's a fountain involved with cooling your liquid transmitter nowadays, there's probably a problem, I would say. So.
Indeed, yes.
So we're talking about that. We're also going to look at liquid cooling at a really interesting and a place that they got to be pretty particular about the transmitters, and that's at the One World Trade Center. You and Chris are going to talk about that. And Don, you're also going to have some thoughts for us on the philosophy of reliability and redundancy and complexity or simplicity in the same box. And I'm very curious to understand your feelings about that, since you've become familiar with some of the design philosophy of the Rode and Schwartz transmitter. So we'll be looking at that and efficiencies and how to save money and all that. We always talk about how to save money. This is episode number 408 of This Week in Radio Tech, and our show is brought to you in part by our friends at LAVO, another German company. We're going to hear from them and be right back with Chris and Don.
There has probably never been a better time in history to buy a new radio mixing console. Today's consoles are more sophisticated than ever, with more features and functions than you can shake a stick at. But have you noticed how complicated they are? There's a sea of knobs and switches and displays and buttons. Some of them look like you might need a pilot's license to do your show. Well, a board doesn't have to be complicated to be powerful. Just look at the new Ruby mixing surface from LAVO. The first thing you notice is how smooth and streamlined it is. Ruby has lots of cool tech, but what it doesn't have is that confusing ocean of buttons that clutter things up. Now, we all know that there are some console features the jock only uses once in a while, so why dedicate controls to them? Ruby fixes this problem by moving those once-in-a-blue-moon controls to a touch-sensitive, customizable GUI that happily shares screen space with your other studio software, helping you fight control room clutter. Thanks to this design innovation, talent that use Ruby produce smoother shows with less errors. Controls that are used the most fall naturally to hand, while functions that rarely need adjustment are easily controlled with just a couple of clicks in the context-sensitive GUI. And Ruby has cool features you won't find on other boards, like Auto Mix, an intelligent gain writing function that guarantees the perfect mix for multi-mic morning shows and call-in segments. Dual-mode snapshots that instantly switch the motorized faders between on-air and production modes. And enough DSP and I/O options to make even your pro sound pals green with envy. And because quality is as important to LAVO as it is to you, every console is proudly built to fanatically precise standards at LAVO's own factory in Germany. If you're ready to declutter your control room, do yourself a favor. Check out the new Ruby and the other cool LAVO radio tech at www.lawo.com/twert.
Thanks a lot to LAVO for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. And we encourage you to visit all of our sponsors, check them out, and let them know through email or whenever you contact them that you heard about them on This Week in Radio Tech that we sent you over there. Really appreciate that very much, because their sponsorship is critical for us continuing to do the show. All right, it's Kirk Harnack along with Chris Tobin and Don Backus. Now, Don, you have been around the radio industry for a while. I know I've run into you at trade shows and in sales situations, you representing a couple other companies, Broadcast Electronics and perhaps Enco. Give us the quick elevator speech. We're going down to the first floor to the reception. What can you tell me about where you've been?
Well, it all starts at Michigan State University, where I started in campus radio and worked there for a while. Then, knocked around Michigan mostly in radio on the air, worked in South Bend, Indiana for a little while, ended up in Lansing, which is kind of cool because that's where I'm from. So that was the chance of being the afternoon disc jockey on a radio station that you grew up listening to. And people would come by at remotes and go, "I remember you from high school." Say, "Yeah, well, you wouldn't talk to me then." But so there was that. It was a very cool situation. And had a chance with a friend of mine to buy a radio station in northern Michigan. We did that for 10 years, and we had a really good time, learned a lot, made a little here and there. It was in an area with an Air Force base. The Air Force decided that there was no threat anymore, so they could start closing Air Force bases. So we covered the base realignment and closure commission hearings in, I think it was 92. We won a bunch of awards for, as we referred to it off the air, as covering our own funeral. So the market went away largely. It's starting to come back, but it's been a long haul for the folks up there. And ended up moving over to the equipment end of things. Worked at Audio Broadcast Group in Grand Rapids for a while. Then moved over to ENCO, Broadcast Electronics, about 6 years ago, and Rodin Schwartz just slightly over a year ago.
So twice now you have said Rode and Schwartz. And, you know, I guess I grew up seeing pictures of, never got the touch because I thought it was too expensive, their test equipment, like spectrum analyzers and digital oscilloscopes and things like that. Chris Tobin, you got the same experience? You got any Rode and Schwartz gear that you've used?
I've used a test equipment, test measuring equipment. Pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
But not transmitters.
That was my early experience. And so I always thought Rode and Schwartz would be it. But, you know, I don't know. I'm obsessed with knowing how to properly pronounce something because I don't like to be wrong about that. So, Don, twice now you said Rode and Schwartz. What are the alternatives?
There's Rode and Schwartz. There's Rode and Schwartz. There's the, you know, very German pronunciation that I don't even want to do for fear that, you know,
they're listening.
Any of the folks in Munich. Yeah, exactly. So on our Rode and Schwartz, I had no idea it was the size company it was when I joined. I mean, we have 10,000 employees, you know, worldwide. Yeah, that's what I thought. Video onboarding, you know, for training. And there literally were four different pronunciations in company prepared onboarding videos for, you know, for welcome to the company. You have to learn how to do this and learn what not to say and what not to do, that kind of stuff. You know, how to treat people, all of which, you know, stuff that you would do anyhow, but if you're a decent human being anyhow. But you go through the videos, you go through the lessons, and there were four different pronunciations there.
Hey, so let's chat before we get the pictures. I want to chat about this liquid cooled thing. Now, I know there's another manufacturer. I believe Gates Air is making a liquid cooled transmitter, or a hybrid liquid air cooled. And, you know, we saw liquid cooled transmitters from way back in the maybe 30s and 40s and 50s. Some of these 50 kilowatt AM transmitters were liquid cooled. And of course, television transmitters have for a long time been, you know, vapor phase liquid thingy cooly. So TV engineers get this. But radio engineers, if I put a liquid cooled transmitter in, that would be so cool and so different from my experience. Kind of get if I bought a liquid cooled transmitter from Rode and Schwartz, what would I expect that's different from what I've always known?
I think the first thing you'd notice is that it's quiet. It is insanely quiet because there are no fans running in it. It is literally just a very silent of liquid going through the coolant pipes and the pump running on the pump stand, but it's incredibly quiet. And if that was the only thing, a lot of managers would go, yeah, okay, but that's the free thing. That's what you get free. The other thing you notice is the footprint. The footprint's a lot smaller. 40 kilowatts in a single rack, 7 square feet.
Whoa.
Would get you up to 40 kilowatts. If you want to go 80, if you're a high powered, you know, flamethrower and you 80 kilowatts, 14 square feet.
So you can put 40 kilowatts of FM RF out a pipe in the top and the transmitter sits in the size of a deep rack, right?
Yes. Yes.
So that's 7 square feet. And then is there any other power supply sitting off to the side?
No power supplies. No, the only thing that's off to the side, there's a pump stand. If you've got a fully populated 40 kilowatt, there's a pump stand. And I think one of the pictures we've got shows that's dual pumps and an expansion tank. And then outside there's the heat exchangers.
Okay.
Which is what we use to get the heat out of the room.
Do they look a bit like outdoor air conditioning units, the outdoor part of an air conditioner?
Very much so. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
So very proven technology. It's just takes the coolant in, cools it down, and pushes it back into the system.
Now, I know Chris Tobin's sitting back on, hey, this is old hat, Kirk. Come on. But, you know, out the boonies in the small towns and villages where I have worked, And the biggest, you know, Memphis, Tennessee, my probably the biggest city I've done a lot of engineering in. But yeah, you know, nobody had liquid cooled radio transmitters. So this would be an all new experience. And I got to believe that, okay, I'm thinking of the benefits that accrue to moving that heat outside without having to move it by pushing air outside. That's kind of coming to me as a benefit here. The heat goes out through a pipe and it's not inside the building anymore.
Exactly. You save a phenomenal amount of money on electricity, on complexity of your HVAC system. For instance, you don't, in most cases, you wouldn't be in the position of needing HVAC. You would want some for, you know, convenience if you're working on something and make sure that your Omnia stays healthy and isn't overheated. But the transmitter, again, different power levels, different effect on the room. But running 40 kilowatts in a single rack, it kicks out right around 700 watts into the room, which is roughly the amount of heat that two people generate.
Two people or half a hairdryer.
Yeah. And the rest of it, you know, goes outside. So you're not having to use a bunch of 5-ton air conditioning or, you know, 10-ton or whatever air conditioning units to cool it down. And the other really neat thing about it is that it's all redundant. The pumps, there are two of them. They're redundant. They operate at the same time. So if one fails, which is, you know, really not terribly likely. But if one does fail, the other pump can handle 100% of that rack. And the same thing with the heat exchanger, that if one of them fails, 100% of the cooling can still be handled by the one fan. It just works a little harder. But we designed the system so that neither one of them work that hard. They're kind of loafing.
The plane will still fly on one engine. It's better to have two, but... Okay.
Yeah, and you don't need a Sully to make it work. It just does it on its own.
Oh, really? So you, no fancy things have to happen if an outdoor fan fails or a pump fails.
No, it doesn't. It lets you know. And then in the case of the pump, for instance, there is an AB both switch, and it normally sits in the both position. So you order, get another pump in, and our parts depot is located in Columbia, Maryland, 15 minutes away from the Baltimore airport. Strangely enough, right next to Xperi, the HD radio folks these days. That's literally walking distance. But you can get a pump from us, or we also have the ability to get some of the more widely occasionally used parts, consumable parts, you might call them, like pumps and things like that, on Amazon Prime. So you could, you know, if your transmitter goes down, or one of the pumps, rather, goes down at 11 o'clock tonight, you can get online, you can order it, and it shows up the next morning, and you can go out and swap it. And you can swap it while it's running.
What? I can swap a pump while it's running? What about the liquid?
That's the function of the switch. Because it normally has liquid going through both.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So when one fails, you flip it over, you know, to the A position, for instance, and then you can swap pump B.
I thought maybe you're going to say, well, if you spill any, you know, it is German design. It's actually German beer running through there. And so if you spill some, you can just drink it. It's okay.
That would be so cool. And yet, no. Sadly. No, it's not. That would be really good liquid cooling. I like that. I'll have to run that by the guys in Munich.
Chris, I saw those liquid cooled transmitters at One World Trade Center. Are there any other liquid cooled transmitters that are part of your life or your travels?
Just a couple of TV sites that I've done some work with. That's about it. But no radio sites, just television.
Yeah, and of course, One World Trade is all television at this point. We don't know if there'd be any radio stations there. But if there weren't any radio stations there, Chris, they would also likely be liquid cooled, right?
If I was moving there, I would probably consider it a lot. As Don pointed out, it is very quiet, and as you know, Kirk, from being up there, it's pretty wild how quiet it is. And the temperature, the entire room at World Trade Center is open. There are no walls. There's no cages. Everything is open. It's a very secure place. So the fact that I can walk from one end of the floor to the other, which is half the building's width, and not feel a temperature gradient change, as you would say in a typical transmitter site with multiple transmitters and, you know, setups, is pretty pretty important and it's worth understanding. And I think if I was to move my facility into that site, I would definitely consider water cooled, without a doubt. 100% water cooled, or liquid cooled, I should say.
Yeah.
I was saying the same thing too.
Yeah, I fall into it too sometimes, just saying water cooled, but about 40% of it is water, deionized water, and the 60% is the antifrugen, basically an antifreeze glycol mixture that we use to pull the heat out and make sure there's no corrosion in the system.
I love their words. I was just going to say, I had an antifrugen. She made the best pies.
The antifrugen is listed on the container. You will see that when you're up there.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Gotcha. Hey, so let's take a look at some of these pictures. We're going to be talking about the technology. We already know who the company is. They make TV and FM transmitters as well as lots of gear, lots of test gear, Rode and Schwartz. But we're going to talk about the technology and look at pictures now of some installations and have Don tell us about the tech. So, Suncast, can you just start at the beginning and pop us through? What are we looking at here, Don?
That is a 30-kilowatt FM transmitter, although actually it's running in HD, so it's somewhere around 20 kilowatts of minus 10 analog plus HD. That is in Pensacola, Florida. And
okay.
You see the bottom three racks that you see, the bottom three units are each 5-kilowatt amplifier and a power supply modules. And then there's a hole in the middle. A hole is probably the wrong word. I'm sure there's a technical word. And right above it are another three. So that's okay. A total of 30. Then immediately above that is the user interface, the touch screen that the local control. Above that, two HDR 900s, which is our exporter importer. They mm-hmm. have two because they have a redundant system. There's a UPS, and then above that is the cage where the exciter and the control units sit, as well as on the right-hand side, we bring the measurement points out to the front for easy access. And that, of course, is an option. You can have that there. You can have them in the back. You can have them in the front, but horizontal. We offer a lot of choices for folks.
Wow. All right. What's next here? This is inside.
Yeah, this is a shot of the inside. Right in the center is the a series of three RF connectors for each module. That's looking at the backplane itself.
Yeah.
And on the right hand side you can see one of them. About middle on the right is the quick disconnect for one of the liquid cooled connectors. And there's another one similar to it on the far left-hand side. You can see three in a row vertically on the left-hand side, but on the right-hand side, you can only see the one. So that's okay, where the modules slide in.
Yeah, this is with – the modules are not in there now. This is where they would slide into. And you've got power and RF and some control probably on that D-sub connector. And then you've got the liquid on either – on the far left and the far right. And you said they're a quick disconnect. That means they if you pull something out, they don't leak much.
Right, and we try to protect as much as possible to make sure that there's no way that liquid can do it. You'll see, I think there's another picture in here that has a shot of the backside of that, which is valves. So there's a valve that you can do to shut off as well. That's the a coolant stack going out.
Oh, okay.
So you see the green arrow, and there's a picture of the hose. Cut in half. I wanted a cross section. I figured that'd be a really neat picture. Most of these pictures are from Pensacola. This is our web interface that you can access. It is HTML5. There's no Flash. There's no Java. So you can pop right into it and take a look on your laptop or Android phone or iPhone or iPad or literally any device that can talk HTML5.
Okay. Just about anything nowadays. Cool.
Yeah, that's the beauty shot of the HDR 900. That's the Gen 4 importer exporter. Not a lot of user interface to it on the outside. There's a network port on the front. There's obviously network ports and stuff on the back. But that way, if you need to get into it and do any settings, you can do it from the front very easily.
Okay.
This is from Idaho. This is the heat exchanger at one of our stations in Idaho, up in the mountains. This was a funny one. He got his a transmitter about 2 weeks later than he had anticipated, mostly because he didn't get the order placed for like 3 or 4 weeks after he anticipated. So it shows up, and his general manager comes to him and says, I know you'd planned on getting this in before winter, but you can wait till April if you have to. And because you can't get access to the mountain site very easily during the winter. And that's really another big advantage of the liquid cooled is the reduced amount of maintenance required. You're not up there all the time. You're not having to change filters. You're not having to do all sorts of stuff. Fewer moving parts means less stuff that can go wrong. So it's more reliable, and it makes it better for remote sites. So he was actually able to get things up. There was a break in the weather, and he got everything up and installed by a little before Thanksgiving of last year. So he was pretty excited to have everything up and running to save him having to go up as often during the winter.
And you said that it's redundant, so that either one of those two fans that we were looking at there, either one could fail, and there's still enough cooling to take the heat out. Yeah. Okay.
And what's surprising when you watch it work, they don't seem to be running that fast. You would think, I don't know, the back of my mind who has played with air cooled transmitters over the years expected those things to be going like a giant fan in your house or something, just moving air like a son of a gun. It doesn't move that fast at all. It was quite surprising to me. And the picture we just showed was that's the coolant lines going in and out of the transmitter site or the transmitter building itself in Pensacola. The black things are air scoops. Essentially bleeder valves to make sure that no air gets into the system to cause any kind of grief. What we want is just liquid in there circulating. We don't want any bubbles of anything. So that scoops it up. And when you install, you typically set the system running for up to 24 hours just to make sure every little bubble that could possibly be found gets pulled in and squirted out that way.
Okay. And so it does automatically pull air out. Okay, cool.
And you can see in the lower right-hand corner, you can see that aluminum-coated fiberglass on the ductwork that was on their older transmitter that was there.
The old stuff, yeah.
And so I actually have a video. I have a video from that site when they turned their old Continental, which they got they got really good life out of it. So, no complaints about that. But the room got so quiet that all of a sudden you could hear this UPS back in the corner going beep, beep, that you couldn't hear before. Because, we have a failing UPS. How nice of us.
How about that? Okay.
This is the heat exchanger in Pensacola. They installed it in PVC for ultraviolet purposes. We didn't think that was necessary. They wanted to do it. And at the end of the day, it's what the customer wants.
And I guess you can mount this heat exchanger on the roof, or it doesn't have to go on a pad on the outside, does it?
No, it doesn't. It can go on the roof. If you have multiple cabinets or in the case of television where it's very easy to rack up multiple cabinets, as many as, six or seven of them, those heat exchangers can mount on top of each other. I've been to a site in Miami, actually Fort Lauderdale, that has sets of them mounted on top of each other. So they don't want to go too high, which makes perfect sense. But that's the pump stand while it's being filled. So you see there's the gray tray is bent a little bit. Bent's the wrong word. At an angle.
Yeah.
But what you see at the top there in that part of the photo, those are the pumps, the blue and black things. And then the switch at the very top is the switch we're talking about, the A, B, and then both.
Okay, sure. Got it.
Yeah. So, and that's the cooling in and cooling out. Yeah, pump one, plus two, pump one, and then pump two. And then these are the two pumps that we're running.
On the close-up of the pumps, if Suncast could go back one. I see digital readouts there on the back of the pump. What's that?
That is the pressure.
Oh, okay. It looks like 5.8 and 8.6.
Yeah, or the flow, I should say.
The flow. Okay.
Yeah, and
wow, all
this right. was during setup. So you know, heaven only knows, you know, what they actually stabilized to. Yeah. We went down there. It was shortly after I joined the company. It was almost this time last year, and it was right before the hurricane hit Houston. So we were down there in Pensacola when Houston was getting awful weather, and we were just getting an enormous amount of rain. That's all we were getting. And we, you know, the engineer had installed this himself. He'd done all the plumbing, and our guys were just there to tweak it and make sure everything was working great on the HD side.
Let's take a look at that next picture then. So RF.
Yep. This is the RF stack. System itself, the combiner of the system, is also liquid cooled. And you also note on the lower right hand side of the bottom, you can see the electrical service. And each of the amplifiers has its own switch there to make it very easy and safe to hot swap. If you go into you know, amplifier number 2 and turn that off. We've tried to make it as easy as possible. Part of it's just, I mean, part of it, I'm sure, is regulations of some sort that everybody has the, you know, the European equivalent of Underwriters Laboratory. And part of it is just trying to do the right thing for the engineer. We want to make sure that people don't get hurt inadvertently. The quick disconnect on the liquid cooling, somebody said, oh, so it's idiot proof. I said, well, we really don't assume that idiots are going to, you know, be smart enough to buy, you know, our transmitter, or let alone operate anybody's. But what it is it's engineer who's in a real hurry and has a lot of stuff to do really fast proof. So we've tried to make it so, you know, You don't pull it out an inch and a half and go, oh crap, I forgot to, and then do something awful. That's the main thing. It's not idiot proof. It's I'm in a hurry proof. This is the touchscreen that's on the transmitter itself. See, they're running 18 kilowatts out with 8 watts reflected power.
Holy moly, that's incredibly low reflected power. That's terrific.
I'd love to claim credit for that, but I just think it's good engineering on the antenna side, and you know, yeah, the whole system is good. The other thing worth mentioning on the liquid cooling and in the modules themselves is that there is actually an expansion tank, a little chamber inside each one of them, so that you're not in a position where the pressure is so great that when you push against the you know, the quick disconnect, that water or liquid goes spewing out into the cabin.
Yeah.
So gotcha. We've allowed for that. So besides the big green tank and the pump stand, there's a little tank inside each one of the modules as well. It's just it's very well engineered. And you know, I say that without, you know, patting myself on the back, because I had nothing to do with the engineering. Absolutely nothing. It's just I look at it and go, wow. And then I learn a little bit more about it and I go, oh, double wow. You know, it's just a really smart group of men and women who just want to make things work as best they can for as long as they can with minimal amount of intervention. It's really, you know, it's very impressive. It really is.
So Don, we are talking to Don Backus with Rohde & Schwarz. Don is the U.S. account manager for radio transmitters for Rohde & Schwarz. And we're going to take a quick break. You know, Chris Tobin actually has some pictures to share with us as well. We're going to see if we can give Suncast a couple of minutes to take care of getting those up. We can look at them in the next coming up in the next few minutes and compare. They look real similar, but I think maybe some of the pumps are a bit bigger, so we'll check that out in just a minute. We're talking to Don Backus from Rohde & Schwarz. Chris Tobin is along with us. You're watching or listening to This Week in Radio Tech. And our show is brought to you in part by our friends at the Telos Alliance. And you know, streaming is such a big thing nowadays. In fact, we're finding out that smart speakers like say, I have one right here. Will it fit up here? Yeah, here we go. Here's a Google Home Mini, and I have this right here on my desk. I have a really nice Amazon you know who back by here. I'm not going to say her name though. I don't want her to come on. And the smart speaker listening is really taking off. I mean, it's moving up. It's still a small percentage of overall listening, but in the you know, it's taking up. Eventually, it's going to overtake, you know, computer and smartphone listening because it's so convenient. And honestly, it sounds better. What comes out of a of a, even a Google Home Mini sounds better than the speakers on your cell phone. And on the Echo, especially the second generation Echo, sounds really good. Well, the folks at the Telos Alliance are really keenly aware of this, and they consider your stream to be like your second transmitter, right? Your FM transmitter, like our show's about, that's been our only thing for decades. Now it's our primary and kind of our secondary, and who knows, maybe another decade or more, we're going to see streaming match over the air listening as we get streaming everywhere. But the folks at the Telos Alliance have some amazing products to do your streaming. And to help you implement this right, Telos asked me to research and write an article. And so, yeah, this is a bit self-serving. I'm gonna tell you about my article. Get more listeners with audio processing for smart speakers. And so this article is about how to make sure you maximize your listeners on smart speakers by using the right adjustments and, well, the right audio processing and the right adjustments to that audio processing. And in this article, we take a look at, you know, the different bit rates that you may be using, the difficulty you may have with lower bit rates, or the pleasure you may have with higher bit rates, at least on the audio side. But then you've got to think about what your listeners can hear. Are they going to be able to all pick up 128 or 256 kilobits per second in a mobile operation? And, you know, if they're in their car or walking around. And we got comments on here. If we could scroll down the article a bit more, we got comments and advice from two people who are really good at this. Actually, three. Leif Claesson, the designer of the Omnia 7, the Omnia 9 processor, and the Omnia 9 processing that is in one of our stream encoders, that being the ZipStream 9X2. Also, Cornelius Gould. Now, Corny has done a lot of research into audio for streaming. And then Mark Manolio, his picture is just going by here on our webpage. Mark is our support guy for Omnia, he's right there with customers and users who want to get the best out of their audio processing, want the best advice. Mark is extraordinarily helpful in getting that done. And to give you one takeaway point from the article, and you can find this on the Telos Alliance website in the blog section about audio processing for smart speakers. One great takeaway is something that Leif Claesson told me about, and that is with a smart speaker, you really want to have long-term, you want to have a small dynamic range. So that means that, you know, if I tune in this morning, tune in this afternoon, tune in 5 minutes from now on a smart speaker, I want that station, that radio station, that audio to be at a consistent level. But short-term dynamics, you know, punches of vocals or violins or drums or a blast of trumpet from the horn section, you want that to be dynamic. You want that to, you know, bebop along and sound good and not be fatiguing, not be all clipped like we typically have to do for AM or FM loudness. Since we're using codecs here, the strategies have got to be completely different. Your smart speaker, your internet stream is not an FM transmission or an AM transmission. It's using a codec. And so it's a different animal. We know that from HD radio. We know that from actually close to 20 years of internet streaming experience. So we want a long-term, very minimal dynamic range, but short-term, we just want to have that snappy, punchy feeling. And that's something that Omnia processors are really good at, especially with the undo function and the declipping function available in the Omnia 7 and the Omnia 9 processors and in the ZipStream 9X2. So check out that article if you would. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. If you're a subscriber to our regular weekly newsletter, Direct Current, then you got a link to this article in your mailbox. It's there right now. So if you're a Direct Current subscriber, click on that link and have a look and read about your audio processing for smart speakers. A good subject. You know, it's important now. And hey, if you don't think it's important now, years from now, you're going to look back at this show and realize, you know that, Kirk, he was talking the truth. That's right. That's really important there. So, all right. Thanks a lot to the Telos Alliance for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. And check out those Omnia processors. All my streams are done with Omnia, and it's just good stuff. We're talking with Don Backus on This Week in Radio Tech. Chris Tobin is here. We're talking water-cooled transmitters from Rohde & Schwarz. And, you know, water cooling isn't the only technology we're going to talk about. Let's see. I realize that Suncast has been pretty busy here, but Suncast, do you have available those pictures that Chris Tobin just sent along? Either we'll see. Ah, there we go. Yep. Wow, Chris Tobin. tell us what we're looking at here. Or maybe Don could. You both of you do.
Well, that's just that's the single cooling pump, the liquid cooling pump, multiplied by several because of the multiple TV transmitters at World Trade Center. So I just thought it'd be appropriate to show. Don showed the Pensacola location for a typical standalone FM. And if you had, say, a multiple FMs at a site, you probably would see something like this.
And World Trade Center also uses the our cooling system for their external combiner, too.
That's correct.
Which is kind of cool. It's kind of a vote of confidence, which is kind of cool.
Oh, man. Plumber's delight or plumber's nightmare? What we got here?
That's just the
Chris,
plumbing.
What are we looking at? Okay.
That's the plumbing above the pumps. And that's just, there's a set of pumps. There's the pipes in and out, the switches and stuff. There's an actual use. And there's pump speeds.
Wow. Whole new world for me, for a lot of.
Just, those pictures are just to reinforce what you mentioned earlier, Kirk. If you want to have the same technology that's used at One World Trade Center, that's what it would look like at your site.
Gotcha. All right. Well, Don, let's chat for a second about remote control. I've never installed a German transmitter before. Are they remote controllable?
Oh, absolutely. SNMP. Okay. We have the web interface that we referred to earlier. Downloading the MIB is very easy to do. You just do it right from the interface itself on the transmitter. It just grabs the current version off of the off of our website. And for old school folks, even though you might be new school when it comes to the energy efficiency and everything of the water cooled transmitter, for old school folks, we can do parallel interface and contact closures. It's awesome.
Oh, okay. So even I could have one up.
Yeah, and we can do all three. Yeah, exactly. Because if that makes sense to me. Go, this SNMP, this is hard. It's what's really cool about it is that interface, the web interface in the SNMP, allows you to get to the cooling system as well as the transmitter itself. Because we control the power to all of those things from the transmitter, we have access to whether they're on, whether they're functioning, what the temperature is. What the rotational speed of the fans are, all that information you can get, and then you get an alert. You might definitely want an alert before it says heat exchanger fan 2 is not working. You might want one that says heat exchanger fan number 2 is operating at 10% less rotational speed than 1. For instance, so that you can see, there's something amiss here. I don't know what, but maybe I can go out and figure it out beforehand, before it fails altogether. So it gives you the opportunity to drill down and get all that information.
So I want to chat for a little bit about the notion of reliability and redundancy and complexity or simplicity. And these kind of all go together, but I think they're at odds with each other. Now, look, where I engineer oftentimes in rural Tennessee or Mississippi or Arkansas, good redundancy means having two hardware stores within 30 miles. or having two Walmarts within 30 miles.
Yeah, there you go.
That's sometimes that's the only redundancy that we can get. But I get the feeling that these transmitters have a lot of thought put into them. So I'm going to back off a minute here because really I feel like the professionalism or the design sensibilities in these transmitters are very familiar to Chris Tobin and his experience in America's number one radio market and TV market too. So maybe Don, you could expound on those things, reliability, redundancy, and simplicity. And Chris can comment or query you about that.
Well, I think the thing that impresses me the most when I look at the inside and I look at some of the designs is the, dedication to simplicity and making things as reliable as possible by removing as many interconnections and viewing things as items that shouldn't fail. But if they do, have them fail gracefully. I think that's the phrase I like to use. Anything can fail. It's just, you know, it can be lightning. It can be just bad luck. But what happens when it fails? Does the entire transmitter go down? Does the entire module go down? One transistor in a module, does that cause the entire module to go down? And the answer to that from our perspective is no, it shouldn't, and it doesn't. It reduces your output a little bit, but not a lot. If a power supply in one of the modules goes out, it reduces your output a little bit, but not a lot. And then you can get a replacement module. We ship you out one right away, and you swap it out, and you're back up to 100%. But the idea is you shouldn't go from 100 to zero. You should go from 100 to, let's say 95, if you're running, full board. So the idea of failing gracefully, I think, protects the station and keeps it on the air. The level of redundancy, that's just efficiency. I mean, that's the other side of the electrical efficiency. I think we've got a product that's very efficient electrically. It saves money over air cooled, on average 13% or more on your electric bill, which is all really good. But if you're having to go out to the transmitter a lot to fix it, that saving's not quite as, significant. But if you're going out less, if you're performing less in the way of scheduled maintenance, because you don't have to swap fans, you don't have to mess with HVAC, and there are fewer moving parts, fewer interconnections to fail. I think it benefits the station. Again, efficiency of not just, the financial aspect, but efficiency of the engineer.
There's truth in it.
Yeah, Chris, I thought maybe
you'd so.
Yeah, no. I have to say, from observing the installation at One World Trade Center, yes, the TV transmitters, but the great thing is the design is such a FM or TV, so you can apply both. The one thing when I walked away from watching the installation, watching the commissioning and observing the function of the transmitter, is that it's definitely designed with I'll call it the user interface or the user equipment interface in mind. One of the things I love about the transmitter design, and both for FM and for the TV, is the pop-out LCD screen in the control chassis.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, well, what's the big deal? I said, well, there is a big deal. Because I've had transmitter sites where I put a VESA mount on the front of a transmitter in order to get the GUI controlled in front so I could do something with it rather than have to try and plug into the network and do all kinds of crazy stuff. And I looked at that and I was like, wow, this is really smart. This makes sense. And it's easily functional and all on all levels. And the other thing I observed from transmitters in the past that I've worked on is there are no SMA connectors sticking out of the front of the chassis. RF sample ports, things like that. And I was interesting. So it's put together very nicely. And if you really smartly look at your transmitter design, FM or TV, we'll talk about FM, and you pay attention to those details when you're building out your site, I think you'll find that what Don's talking about, the efficiencies of engineering and design, actually are probably like tenfold. Because all of a sudden, the things you've taken for granted or you just assume I have to do because that's how it's always been is no longer required. You literally take the box, put it in a room, your footprint is probably 10 to 15% more smaller than you realize, and you can actually squeeze it in a place that you may have no choice but to squeeze into because, let's face it, transmitter site real estate is very costly these days. So if you can shave off a couple of square feet in your building or on the floor of a building or multi-site, that's a savings in itself. And this box, the footprint is unbelievable. And the fact that the liquid cooling and the way they've done it is very, very compact. Again, I'm basing all this on watching what they did at One World Trade Center. I have not been to Pensacola. I have not been to any other sites that are FM sites that have this setup, so I can't make a comparison. But I'm just observing what I have seen, and I can assure you that the square footage of the building does play a part in how much you want to put on the floor.
Well, and I will say that the television transmitters that are at One World Trade Center are if you stand more than a few feet away from them. They are literally identical. I mean, infrastructure. The pump infrastructure, the liquid cooling, the amplifier design, the cage for the exciter and the control, all of that stuff is exactly the same. And I don't think anyone would be able to invest what we've invested in FM in just building an FM transmitter. We built a transmitter. And it's not just television. It's not just UHF. It's not just medium wave. It's not VHF. It's not just FM. It's transmitter. And we have around the world, we have 10,000 liquid-cooled transmitters in the field.
Wow.
Which is, it's a mind-boggling number. But it does mean that we've got that part of it figured out. I think we've got the liquid cooling about as good as it can be. We don't use a transfer plate inside the modules. We actually cut channels into the heat sink that we use to pull the heat out. We split the coolant when it comes in so that there's not a warm side and a cool side or a hot side and a warm side. We spread it out so that the temperature is as consistent as possible across the entire module, which leads to longer life for all the components. So there's a lot of little details that it's really incredible. We manufacture over 90% of the parts in the transmitter at our factories. So we have QC from pretty much from top to bottom. We will purchase pumps from companies that's their life. They manufacture pumps. And the heat exchangers and things like that. But the componentry inside, all that milling work, all the we manufacture our own screws. But we do a lot of stuff above and beyond transmitters, too. We do a lot of test equipment. There's a lot of other amplification that we do. Test equipment not just for typical engineering things that when I think of, spectrum analyzers and things like that, but 5G, 4G gear. There are a lot of places at automotive, for instance, all those radar systems that are designed for cars, you've got to be able to test that stuff. And we manufacture gear that allows the auto manufacturers and the third party providers to envision, build, test, and then go back and revisit what they need to in order to make the radar systems work well for things like everything from lane change to autonomous vehicles. So we have a really strong technological base around the world, and that allows us to bring a lot more to building FM transmitters than we might have if we just decided, hey, my dad's got a garage, let's build an FM transmitter.
I'm going to ask a question that maybe engineers would like me to ask, because I'm going to ask you to help help me, help you, help me. Okay. So let's say, Don, that I'm an engineer and I've been I have maybe a tube type backup transmitter, and sure have noticed that we've been using it more often as our somewhat newer transmitter is, and maybe the newer transmitter is a tube type as well. But we've noticed that replacement tubes are getting more expensive, and they don't seem to last nearly as long as they used to. Mm-hmm. I've certainly heard chatter on Facebook and other forums where engineers say things like, I think they lost the recipe on making good tubes. I don't know. I'm not the guy that services our transmitters anymore. Our friend Mike Patton is doing that now, but I know he's had to replace a number of tubes in our transmitters. So that's pretty obvious there. If it's hard to get a tube and it doesn't last very long and it's expensive, it's probably time that you can easily economically justify going to a new technology. But that's where my question leads. I'm an engineer, Don. I know we need a new transmitter. I know they're not cheap, but I also know, or I believe, that it could pay for itself in some years with fewer breakdowns, fewer visits from me, the engineer, lower electric bill, and not having to buy tubes. Now, emphasize what I'm asking about here, and maybe tell me if I'm forgetting something. Can I end up getting a return on investment from a new FM liquid cool transmitter?
Oh, very much so, and depending on power, if you're electric power. Let's say you're in Hawaii, which is the high end of the scale, I'll admit. Yeah. But if you're in Hawaii, you're probably paying 27, 28 cents per kilowatt hour.
Yeah, about 30, I think.
Okay. At 40 kilowatt transmitter, the difference between an air-cooled and liquid-cooled is about $270,000 over 10 years in electric consumption alone.
Wow.
There's your transmitter, baby. Wow. It's free. Wait, and then
some. That's not the cost. That's the difference in electric consumption between a tube and liquid cooled.
That's the difference. Now, in the rest of the world, rest of America. I shouldn't say the rest of the world, because there are a couple of places, you know, mountaintops, very specific areas. There's one in Maine where I think the electric is over 50 cents a kilowatt hour, which I can't even wrap my head around. But typically, if you're looking at 11 to 15 cents a kilowatt hour, which most of the rest of the U.S. is, you're still looking at being able to save $100,000 over a 10-year period. And while it is true that quite often one has to pay for, you know, pay for quality, pay for engineering above and beyond what you might expect, we're very affordable. We have the, you know, a dedication to build this market for us in the U.S. the right way. I mean, we've done very well with the television with Repack, and it's giving us the ability to, you know, earn a seat at the table as one of the top, you know, our goal is to eventually be the top transmitter manufacturer for high power anyhow in the U.S. We'll get there.
So, so you've helped make the value proposition. If I'm an engineer and I need to go to my manager or station owner and say, we need to do this. Otherwise, you're just going to keep paying and paying and paying for something that's getting less and less reliable. And, or parts are no longer made for. We've got transmitters that the company's still in business, but no parts. At least not the parts that we need, which seem like common parts. You know, if you want to make them, you're going to have to make them yourself. So that's time to get something new.
I was just going to say real quick, it's not just the electric savings. I've got and the higher power, the better the economic argument is for us. But even at 10 to 15 kilowatts, I have a station I'm working with right now. Their payback period, because we're going to be in this instance, we're a little more expensive, but their payback period is 2.7 years. So after 2.7 years, they're making money.
Wow.
Because of reduced electric. Yeah. And you know this transmitter is going to go for another 20 years above and beyond that, during which time they're reducing their cost of operation all the time and with less engineering required.
Wow.
And less HVAC maintenance and all that other good stuff. And it'll be quieter too, but that's free.
and I want to be fair and point out that in moving from any tube technology to – probably any brand, modern brand of solid state is going to save electric money on electricity. But when you move all that, heat outside in liquid form, then you really can't. I mean, I have transmitter sites that, we have big honking air conditioners running 24/7 to keep those things cool out in the middle of a Mississippi bean field. And there's a lot of moisture in that air. We don't want to bring it inside, so we have to have a closed system. So we have a closed system cooling four tube-type transmitters, and that's a lot of
air. You talk to people with salt, salt water. If you talk to people in California right now with smoke coming from forest fires, thank God that's not something that happens all the time, but it happens sometimes. And the ability to not have that air affect your cooling system, not affect your transmitter. There's an infamous site that is in a feedlot out west, and the air is so bad that it corrodes the metal of the transmitter as the air is being pulled through it. You don't have that with a liquid cooling.
Wow.
I mean, I suppose there's enough acid it could probably corrode the heat exchanger, but that's it. It contains the damage to something that's outside.
That's what's outside. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. I mean, I never really thought of that as a big advantage until the engineer brought that up to me. I thought, my God, I'd never thought of it. Who would put a transmitter in the middle of a feedlot? And he goes, they don't complain. They're cows.
Oh, gosh. All right. Hey, you are listening or watching to This Week in Radio Tech, episode 408. Don Backus is with us. Chris Tobin is along as well. We're talking about liquid-cooled transmitter technology. Don works with the folks at Rohde & Schwarz, and they're introducing all over the U.S. Liquid-cooled transmitters that have some pretty cool advantages. So we're going to be wrapping things up here in a minute with a tip of the week from Chris. And I want to ask Don to think of a tip, a website, something cool, a white paper. Don, I'm sorry to spring this on you. I always forget to mention it during the pre-show meeting that we need something really good from you right after the break here. Hold people through this little break. All right. All right. This is This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, and one of our sponsors is the folks at Henry Engineering, and they have this amazing, cool rack unit product called the Sportscaster. It's a sports broadcast and audio control system, and it's designed to work either by itself or with other products that Henry Engineering already makes. It can be used with these really cool pod boxes. That's not the right word for them. I'll think of it in just a minute. But the Sportscaster is an audio control system. That is, it's a mixer, and it does more for managing the audio portion of a sporting event radio or video broadcast. Now, when you use it along with Henry Engineering sports pods, there's the word, Sportscaster creates an integrated system that includes all the essential audio functions, including audio mixing, of course, for on-air or webcast, headphone audio management and distribution, and off-the-air intercommunication, that is intercoms. Yeah, this does intercom at the same time it's providing headphone feeds and audio mixing of your show. So by integrating all these functions in one device, the Sportscaster eliminates the need for multiple mixers, distribution systems, headphone amplifiers, intercoms, power supplies, complicated wiring, and man, that wiring can multiply like rabbits when you're doing a sports remote. The Sportscaster provides all those essential functions in a compact 1RU package. It's pretty amazing, actually. So again, talent headphone audio distribution, talkback intercom mic facility for the producer. It has duplex intercom between the producer and the talent. They can talk to each other. Producer headphone audio mixing, headphone mix for the field reporter or camera operators. So even people that aren't going to be, the camera operators aren't going to be part of the on-air mix, they still get to hear the mix, and you can talk to them over the intercom system. A field reporter headphone output, and you have party line intercom between the producer, the talent, the field reporter. You see, intercom is a big deal here. That way you can keep everybody on the same page and pass along information, coordinated. So when you go to that field reporter, bam, they're ready to go, whether you're doing this for video or for radio only. There's also talk back from the producer to the camera operators, inputs for crowd mic, PA announcer, etc., and a cue bus to audition auxiliary sources. Plus, of course, a main program output to go to your on the air or your streaming. This is an amazing product. If it's in one RU, put it in a portable rack, take it with you, pack in a couple of those, two or three of those Henry Engineering sports pods. And the sports pod gives your announcer, your color announcer, your spotter, a box that they have a cough button. They can turn themselves on or off. They can adjust their own headphone feed, you know, like more me, you know, how talent likes to hear more me. It's all built in, and it's just as cool as can be. And you know where you can get this product, this Henry Engineering Sportscaster? Get it from Broadcasters General Store. They are sponsoring this part of the show, and we appreciate them very much. BGS.cc is the website, BGS.cc. Or you can call them at, 7700. I got the phone number wrong, I'm sure. It's probably here on the website. Thought I had it memorized, but maybe I don't. Broadcasters General Store, you talk about friendly people, and they have developed an inventory system and a computer ordering system over the years that has served them so well. It's custom made for them, and it allows them to take your order quickly, give you a delivery date, track your order, let you know if there's going to be any problems in your order being delivered on time. I just love these guys. I've been ordering from Broadcasters General Store for, I guess since I met Sam Phillips back in Memphis, Tennessee, back in the late 1980s. I've been ordering from BGS. So check them out. They're just wonderful people at BGS.cc, or give them a call. And we appreciate them sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. And check out that Henry Engineering Sportscaster. We'll put links in the show notes, all right? It's about time for that. School just started. If you haven't got your sports plan together, you need to get it together. All right, continuing on. Yeah, continuing on with This Week in Radio Tech. Chris Tobin, always ready with a tip of the week. What you got for us?
All right, well, since we're speaking, talking about transmitters, temperatures, coefficients, all these things, I thought it'd be best to break out the IR thermometer. This is the 62 Mini, the Fluke, which I think may be a discontinued model now. but I've had it for a couple of years. It works very well. Very handy, and here's the reason why you should consider this. It's a simple purchase. I think the 62 Max is the new one. It's under $100, but unless you want NIST certification, NIST, that's about $200. But I'm sure you're not involved in that kind of measurements of temperature. Handy. You're say you're in studios and you have air conditioning problems and people claim it's hot, it's cold, it's hot, it's cold. Shoot this, or I should say laser shot at the wall around the thermostat in the studio and verify thermostat display is truly what's being displayed in the room itself. You can verify this. And the reason I say this is when I've called in our HVAC guys to do work on our system, they bring in their unit. And that's the first thing they check to make sure that the thermometer is actually calibrated roughly. I mean, it's not, now we're talking 0.001% in degrees, but close enough so they know that, okay, it's not the thermometer, it's not having an issue, thermostat that is, and off they go. Now, a transmitter site, many of you, if you have a tube transmitter still, which is not a problem, stack temperature. You could use a probe, you could stick the old turkey thermometer into the stack, or you could be measuring the exhaust air and measure the intake air, things of that sort. You could also be using a remote control monitoring device for that purpose. But this guy can then calibrate, make sure that you're monitoring electrically, you know, is working right. So it's handy. I actually, a friend of mine asked me to cover his transmitter site last year, and once every 2 weeks I had to go and check on things. It was a TV transmitter site. Four cabinets putting out lots of RF, lots of heat. And the job was to measure what's coming out and go up to the actual air conditioning duct and measure the temperature coming out, which is supposed to be steady because it was chilled water. So it was supposed to be at a certain temperature at all times. Real easy to do, real quick. He also had the mechanisms to monitor it electronically, but those can tend to fail or drift. So this guy is your backup to that. Small investment, well worth it. And one last thing, let's not forget, if you're doing audio stuff and running around the studios, like I will be tonight with a TV crew, sometimes you got to quickly check, am I feeding IFB or monitor audio to those guys with the camera? Plug in, comes out the speaker, and you got audio. You can feed them tone as well. So two tools that you should always have in your box. Oh, wrong way.
I've never had one of those infrared temperature probes. I need to get one, either that one or the camera style that attaches to your phone nowadays. But
yeah, I've used this little guy for my duplexer tuning when I've been tuning up duplexes for two-way radio stuff. And actually working at a Master FM site one night, we were doing work on a combiner with a consultant, and he was noticing some issues, and he forgot his. And I said, really, you use one of these? He goes, yeah, let me show you. So I took out mine, and sure enough, we could measure the temperature of the cavities, and we could find the hot spots where the detuning was taking place. So little things like that. It's handy.
Can I measure my forehead temperature with one of those? See if I got a fever?
Absolutely. Here, let's try this.
Does it work? Does it really work? 97.
Yeah, I knew it was a hothead.
Oh. No, you're a little cool. That's awesome. That is so awesome. All right, Don Backus, you've got a tip for us, something about broadcasting. What is it?
Yeah, well, too. First off, whenever possible, play ball with your kids and your grandkids.
Yeah, that's good advice. That is.
But also, I think that the thing that I have found over the years, because the very first job I ever had in radio that had anything to do with engineering was I was the a chief operator. You know, we bought a station. I had to learn all this stuff. Ask questions. Ask anybody. Folks at BGS, if they have questions, or if you have questions on a product, on just a technology, you know, all the equipment guys will talk to you and give you information. Essentially, they'll consult with you for free to a degree. You know, the Telos folks are great that way too. We are your other engineers. Everybody likes to share what they know, and so if you have any questions, feel free to ask, because everybody wants to help somebody else out, I think. And as part of that, I would, if you get a chance, go to your state shows. Even if they don't have a huge number of exhibits, the folks that are there are happy to talk with you. And if you get to the radio show, great. But SBE is another wonderful place of swapping information. I can't tell you how many times I've listened on the periphery of a conversation where I'm doing a presentation at an SBE show and somebody's saying, asking a question about a piece of studio equipment or even a microphone or something. I wonder, is this better than this? And people will share their opinions It's non-competitive, I think, in most cases. And, you know, I would just ask. That would be my tip, is ask. John Bissett does a great job of doing that in print, in his workbench, where he's sharing ideas. So I think this industry, especially the engineering side, is generous with their ideas. They're generous with their knowledge. And, you know, ask.
I think that's great advice. And I like your advice about asking people at a broadcast dealer like BGS, Broadcaster yeah. General Store, because they know everybody. They deal with reps. They deal with support people at various manufacturers. I know they deal with us. And even if they don't have the answer, they can tell you what's selling, what's popular, what are people buying. I mean, if you're buying like a Fluke temperature meter, I wrote down, Chris said a Fluke 62 mini, or maybe it's the Max now. But what if I didn't know and I wanted to, you know, call a broadcast dealer and say, hey, you guys sell Fluke stuff. I want to take some temperature readings. What's popular? They can tell you.
Yeah. I mean, even if you don't buy something from an equipment manufacturer or a dealer, there will come a point in time when you remember that somebody treated you right. Somebody helped you out, and that will benefit, you know, and you're planting seeds for the future and a lot of things like that. So many times when I had my station, I talked to equipment people that helped me learn things. And I still remember to this day. I mean, BGS, great folks. You know, Cindy Edwards, awesome.
Yeah, I just saw Cindy last week too. I think she's getting ready to retire.
She was been talking about that for 10 years. She'll still be doing this in 30 years, and she'll be doing it great.
We got to go. I hope we did it great today, Don. We appreciate having you on the show. Thanks for showing up and being our guest today. I appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. I had a great time, and it's good seeing you guys virtually. We'll see you real live, you know, next time, probably another show.
Probably see you in New York. I know Chris will be in New York. Chris, thanks for you being here. I appreciate you taking an hour of your day or more to be with us today, too. Thanks so much.
No problem. My pleasure.
All right. And Suncast, thank you. He's the producer of our show, does a great job. And we're going to have to sign it off here real quickly. Please visit our sponsors. Visit our website, thisweekinradiotech.com. You can also visit the website of the GFQ network. That's gfqnetwork.com and check out the other podcasts they have here. Appreciate Suncast and Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ network. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.